Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. I'm Ian Irving in a hotel room in London. And these two are Andy Mitten and Laurie Whitwell, still inside Old Trafford, the scene of Manchester United's exit from the Champions League. A 1-0 defeat against Atletico Madrid, enough to knock United out of Europe and end their hopes of silverware for this season. I feel deflated, lads. Andy, you look especially deflated, I would say.
I am. I need to grow up of this. I feel like I did when Atletico knocked United out in 1991, and I've not grown up, and I feel gutted. I think it was predictable, unfortunately. And the fourth best team in Spain beat the fifth best team in England. I don't think United deserved to go through after that. Didn't play well in the first leg and struggled to land a punch on Atletico here at Old Trafford tonight. It was a horrible game tonight. I didn't enjoy it. It was a proper Simeone game. He just walked past me now. I was dying to say something to him. He was with Griezmann. Griezmann looks about six in real life. And don't think the referee did United any favours, but nah. Am I stunned? Have I sounded stunned in the last few podcasts when I've talked about this game?
No.
Nah, it's been
no,
coming.
No. And I think that's what makes it the more deflating as well. You sort of, the sense that it was coming, and it's not really a surprise how this second leg has gone, Laurie. I guess it's a hugely disappointing result for United, but not necessarily a surprising one.
No, we'll just talk about it then in the press room. They've won two knockout games since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. And I think you can, I think actually even dating back further than that, since they last made the final in the competition. So, you know,
that's right, 2011.
Yeah, PSG, yeah. And Olympiacos. So
they've only actually beaten Olympiacos in a knockout tie in the Champions League at Old Trafford since they last reached the final. And that's 11 years ago now.
So this is normal. This isn't like an aberration. This isn't like we're stunned United have gone out of Europe at home to Atletico Madrid. This is kind of what you'd expect, really, but it doesn't make it any less painful, and it doesn't make it any less frustrating given the amount of money that's been spent, the amount of managers and players that they've tried. But I think United lost their way. I actually thought the first half was kind of positive, wasn't it? I think the atmosphere was up, the energy was there, that the kind of tempo was there. They weren't letting Atletico Madrid settle, created some good chances. Clearly that one for Elanga, with it hits Oblak right in the face. If that goes either side of him, it's 1-0 and it's a different game. I think if you concede first to Atletico Madrid, as Ralf Rangnick said, then they know how to grind that out. The referee obviously made it easier for them, as Rangnick again was at pains to say after the game. He certainly was not shy about pointing the finger at the officials, which I think he's got, you know, cause to. But the reason why Manchester United went out of that tie wasn't because of the officials. It was because of a really poor performance over in Madrid, and then a naive, sort of disjointed, uncertain finish in the second half. I mean, I was just saying to Andy then, before coming up these steps to avoid the interference on the mics, we're sort of like a few rows.
They've been split up, these two, yeah, aren't they? Best mates.
Wanted to stay on the same row as him.
Reunited.
Yeah, I wanted to give him a nice hug and try and say everything will be okay.
You can hold hands throughout the podcast.
I'm just looking down on him now from about 20 rows behind. But it was actually more the second half performance and how I can't understand how you finish a game with Juan Mata when he's played 172 minutes of football before this point. And this isn't to criticise Juan Mata. He's obviously a very good footballer, really good guy. But he's been warming up the players, basically, for the most of the season in the warm-up, you know, with the shots that they have into the goal. And then he's trusted with, you know, a very crucial moment in the season, the most crucial moment in the season.
I don't get that. I don't understand how you can judge a player every single week that he shouldn't be part of the team and he shouldn't be brought on week after week, and then you get to a moment like this and Juan Mata is the player that you turn to. And it wasn't even the first change, was it? It was after he'd tweaked and tried to change things already to that point. I mean, It's almost like bringing on Nick Powell, Andy, wasn't it? It's not far off, is
it? Yeah, remember Nick Powell coming on? It was for Matter, actually, wasn't it?
Complete circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's history for you.
Juan Matter is a very different person to Nick Powell. I think...
Can't see him playing at Stoke next, anyway.
This is a mad tangent, but he was man of the match against Stoke for United behind closed doors earlier this season, but we're getting wayward here. I think Matter came on because if he does anything well, he finds spaces, he finds pockets of spaces. United were not doing that. There was a lot of bluster. Atletico's hallmark of the last decade really has been their well-organised defence, which has been less well-organised this season. It was a war of attrition there, and Simeone likes them type of games. You saw how animated he was. I thought the Atletico fans were really loud again tonight, but it's just same old. And United tried with the lineup. I thought it was probably the right lineup to go at them. I thought United did all right in the first half, but there was always a danger that Atletico could cut United up with four or five passes. They did that twice in the first half. Once led to the goal. Once led to the offside goal. Their goal was a good goal. I asked the man next to me, I said, should the goalkeeper have saved that? And he went, nah, it was a good header. The only reason I'm repeating this, because the man next to me was Peter Schmeichel.
And who was on the other side of you, Andy?
Gary Neville.
A rose between two thorns, yeah, eh?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Beauty and the Beasts.
Yeah, something like that. I'll ask you two about the starting lineup in a minute, but just to stay on the changes for a little bit longer, Laurie, if we can. Obviously, we've spoken about Juan Mata, but the number of changes, obviously, there's five subs allowed in the Champions League, but it doesn't mean you necessarily have to make them, does it? I wasn't sure exactly whether United looked better for bringing on Pogba, for bringing on Cavani, for bringing on Rashford than they did previous to that, really.
No, it did feel a little bit like making substitutions for substitution's sake. You know, three at once, obviously, so that they could then make another one and another one, you know, in terms of the three different opportunities to make substitutions. But it felt too much too soon. It wasn't like United were, you know, getting desperate necessarily. You know, I thought Scott McTominay was having a really good game. He came off. Obviously, Bruno Fernandes, you know, perhaps has had COVID, so maybe he will have fatigued. But he's your most creative player. You know, he's had the most assists in the Champions League for United this season. So to take him off, you know, it just seemed a little bit counterintuitive. I know Paul Pogba was coming on and he perhaps looks after the ball a little bit better. And my point about Juan Mata isn't to say, I totally agree with what Andy's saying there. He picks passes in those tight spaces and perhaps that's what it needed in that moment. But it's kind of bizarre that you've got a squad that Manchester United have got, and then in the moment of the most pivotal point, you turn into a guy that is basically on the periphery and hasn't played at all. And you had quite a few with players like that. So Juan Mata's out of contract at the end of the season. Paul Pogba's out of contract at the end of the season. Edison Cavani's out of contract at the end of the season. Nemanja Matic. He's got another year added on, but he could go at the end of the season. It's a lot of players you're asking to produce in this moment, and they're in a state of flux, and they haven't really been a team like that before, have they? The team that finished that game is not a team that you go, that's the best team. They should be winning us that match. And I know.
Well, I don't know what the shape or formation was at the end of that game, to be honest, because they lost all sense of structure and cohesion when the changes were made.
Well, that's it. And I know that, listen, you might go back to 99 final and you've got, you know, Teddy Sheringham on and Dwight York and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Andy Cole's on the bench,
but they'd all played. But if they've got a goal,
They played together.
If they've got a goal, it's going to extra time, and then what's going to happen? Is Mata going to centre-half to play alongside Rafael Varane? I mean, I turned to a mate. I was sat in O'Neill's in Kingston in London, not at Old Trafford, unfortunately. Not quite as good to watch the game there, to be fair. But I said, what's going to happen here if we go to extra time? Who's going to play where? How are they going to get through half an hour? Well, you know, it's all right, get into extra time.
I think if they would have played another half an hour in, we wouldn't have scored. I think it was one of them games. I really do. I just think he was just trying any last roll of the dice and nothing was working. And when the substitutes came on, they didn't really have that much of an impact. And I never thought the United would win this competition. I know we had a laugh and a joke about drinking amaretto in St. Petersburg and Paris and all that, but still feels horrible when it happens. And I'm not convinced United will make the top four. And I can almost live with that. What I can't live with, I can't see how it's getting better. I can't see light at the end of the tunnel. I can't see a crop of brilliant youngsters about to emerge. I can't see a manager or the decision being made about a manager who's going to turn things, I can just see same old all the time. While our biggest rivals canter off into the sunset, winning everything, despite Manchester United spending more money on players than them, or at least the same amount. And that's probably what hurts more than anything.
Okay, before we go any deeper into the future of United and where we go from here, let's get some reaction from the United camp. This is the goalkeeper, David De Gea, speaking after United's defeat to Atletico.
They were really disappointed with the result. Well, it's difficult to describe with words how we feel now at the moment, but I think we did not enough in both games to win this both games. We were not at our best, to be honest, but yeah, it's a very disappointed day for us. I think they are a team with a lot of experience. They know how to play those games, Champions League games, tight games. They scored the goal, and it's had a very defensive team, so it was very difficult for us to create chances. We don't create many chances. So this is football, this is Champions League, and we are out of one of the most important competitions, and so we are really, really sad. It's hard. It's hard for the club, for us, for the fans. It's really hard. This is where we are at the moment. Difficult situation, and we need to keep fighting, keep trying our best, but to be honest, it's a tough moment again. I feel sad. I feel for the fans as well and for everyone, but we are not good enough.
Pretty candid, to be fair, from De Gea. Not really sure what else he could say, Laurie, in the circumstances, but good that a Manchester United player was sent up to the press conference and sent in front of cameras to try and explain and put together some thoughts after that result. Did he speak well, De Gea, from what you saw?
I thought so. I think he's realised this season that he needs to take on that statesmanship role, and I think he's done that pretty well. He spoke after Watford, didn't he? I mean, he must be a little bit sick that he keeps having to speak in such low moments, and I mean, he looked distraught in the press conference. You know, he's only a few feet away from us, and you know, we asked him about how it feels to be a part of this squad that hasn't won a trophy for 5 going on 6 years, and how can they fix it, and do they speak, you know, I asked him, do you speak amongst this as players, how can you fix this kind of thing, because it's a bigger question than really any one person can answer, because there seems to be so many questions and so many possible answers, and none of them easy, and he's kind of puffed out his cheeks, and the one thing that he did say that, you know, I suppose was a saving grace was, you know, you listen to the fans tonight and how up for it they were, and they have been pretty consistent throughout this time, you know, this fallow period, and he said that was the thing that gave them inspiration that they would return to big trophies, because at least they've got a fan base behind them that can support them even in these moments.
When Juan Mata joined the club in 2014, David De Gea said, "You won't believe what it's like when we win the league," and he told him about Deansgate being full of Manchester United fans, and Juan Mata hoped that day would come, and it's not going to come for him. And that's pretty sad that Manchester United A have not won the title for so long, but B have not even been in a title race bar like 1 week a year and a month ago. And it points to the issues which we've covered so many times on this podcast, the poor recruitment, changes of managers, the individual players, and it just feels pretty glum when it happens, when we're sitting here after going out again and we've got to watch the first of all, I had to watch all the Atletico fans singing away for about half an hour, the manager going up to them fist pumping. I was just envious, because it used to be us.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But the thing is, Laurie, United now need to get back in this competition, don't they? If they are to attract the best players and the best manager and move forward as a club, they need to be in the Champions League again, don't they? Year after year after year. The one thing that you can say about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's time in charge, he's been the only manager post-Ferguson who seemed to be able to get United in the competition consistently. They've got a right job on their hands to get back in it, though, aren't they? I mean, people are already saying, will Ronaldo play in this competition again? When will Manchester United be back in it?
Big questions, and you're right, it's a huge aspect of the shape of the club going forwards if they don't make the Champions League because of the finances, because of the signings they can attract. I think the managers that they're after, I think they'll probably still come to the club even in the Europa
League. Well, they're out as well, aren't they?
Well, that's it. Yeah. You went and scrolled and thought, okay, I'll go and have a look at who the prospective candidates are doing. Oh yeah, Ajax are out and obviously PSG are already out, so not great auditions. I think I wrote a piece last week where I was saying United will look at how they cope in the Champions League and, you know, they've not done any better than Ralf Rangnick, so there we are.
No.
But I mean, yeah, I think there'll still be some players that will join, whatever, you know, that still good quality players because it's Manchester United and the finances on offer will be more than they're on at the current club. So there is always that caveat. But I do think it's really important to finish in the Champions League, and it does show in hindsight that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's achievements were actually pretty good in that sense. I know it's a low bar, but you know, to be the only one to do it back to back and have it pretty comfortably, you know, certainly in the second season, I think is, you know, an achievement of sorts. And yeah, I mean, you look at the table now, Arsenal 1 point ahead with 3 games in hand. I know they're not necessarily the easiest of games in hand, but they seem in a good moment, and you know, I think they're the favourites, aren't they, by a decent way. I mean, Ralf Rangnick in the press conference just then said they absolutely have to beat Arsenal at the Emirates in April, so it's as simple as that, really.
Okay, let's get some more reaction then from the Manchester United camp once more. Let's hear from the manager, Ralf Rangnick.
Well, I think we played a very good first half, exactly the way that we wanted to play. High energy level. Most of the game in the first half took place in their half. But unfortunately, we couldn't convert that energy into one or two goals. We hit the crossbar. We had another one or two good moments where we could have scored or should have scored, but we didn't. And then conceding that counter-attacking goal short before halftime didn't make life any easier for us. And in the second half, it was difficult. I think I don't think that the game went for more than 3 minutes in a go. It was always interrupted. Somebody lying on the floor. I think also some curious refereeing decisions. I wouldn't say in the end that they were decisive, but at least he fell too often for those time-wasting antics. And in the end, 4 minutes extra time was just a joke for me. But anyway, very good first half. Second half again was difficult to find a rhythm again. In total, we were fully aware that it's important against this team that you score the first goal yourself. We still have another 9 games to play in the Premier League, and we'll try everything to finish off the season on the highest possible level. If possible, qualify for Champions League again. We are fully aware that in order to achieve that, we need to win most of those 9 games. But right now, to think about how can we close the gap to the top teams, it's for me too early. My focus is on finishing on the highest possible level with this team, and then there is enough time to speak about other things.
Laurie, what did you make then of Ralph's comments post-match?
I think he was quite focused on the referee, which I can understand. It must have been quite frustrating. I mean, we saw Darren Fletcher get booked for the complaining to the referee when he didn't give stoppage in play for Diogo Dalot, you know, when he had given stoppage in play for the player with his shin that was hurt, which was a crazy decision. But I did think it was a kind of moot point, really, that there was wider issues as to why United went out. And listen, he did say it was wasn't the decisive aspect to United going out. But on the flip side, you saw a Diego Simeone team, and listen, they're not to everyone's taste the way they play, but it gets results. It was a team, they knew what they were doing, and yeah, it was streetwise, perhaps you'd say the dark arts, but it's got them to two finals previously. He's an incredible sight to watch on the touchline. He's absolutely veins pumping, living every moment, and you know, at the full-time whistle he run down the tunnel, got some cups thrown at him with drinks, and you know, it's probably an unsavoury sight, really unnecessary, I think. But afterwards, yeah, he was asked about it, and he basically said, "Nope, I didn't know what was going on. I just wanted to get in the dressing room and celebrate with my team." So, sort of shows that's the kind of standard a manager he is. You know, ignoring that sort of trivial point in his mind, and listen, United could well look at somebody like that. Maybe the fans wouldn't necessarily take to his football style, but he is a hugely credible manager. He could take on a club the size of Manchester United. I know he's on a lot of money at Atletico Madrid, but at the same time, that is the kind of standard of manager that United ought to be going for. I know in reality maybe it's different, but I think that's what you look at Ralf Rangnick, and he didn't come in with the pedigree that you'd expect of a Manchester United manager. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer didn't come in with the pedigree. I know Jose Mourinho did and it didn't work, probably past his sell-by date. It would be lovely for United to go and get a manager who can handle this kind of occasion, this kind of pressure, who's on an upward curve.
Yeah, in theory, United haven't appointed a permanent manager to lead the club forward since Jose Mourinho, considering obviously Solskjaer was given the job initially on an interim basis, which was then made permanent after. And of course, then there's been Michael Carrick for that short period, and now Ralf Rangnick. Andy, I guess the comparison really that Scholes was reflecting on, and Rio Ferdinand to a degree on BT Sport as well, was the idea that Simeone, Atletico is his club. He's been there over a decade. The players on the pitch, he's had a hand in signing. The tactics, the shape of the team, he's had a hand in shaping over the years. He's had time to build up the identity that this team is and the way that they play. Whereas obviously in the other dugout, you've got a man who's only been in the job for a matter of weeks, months, and he's not going to be there much longer. So there couldn't be much more of a contrast between the two managers in that sense, really, could there?
Simeone took over a club which had been failing, which is a bit like Manchester United now. They were called poopers. Poopers means failing all the time, talking a good story, winning one game, losing the next two matches. And he was 40 years old when he took over at Atletico. So clearly been a top player. He played for them, he'd won the double. He played at Inter against Manchester United. And he'd played over 100 games for Argentina. And then as a manager, he started young and he was at good clubs, big clubs. He worked his way up so that when he took over at Atletico, who used to sack the manager every 5 minutes, he had a decent pedigree. But your central point is right. He shaped the club in his identity, just as Ferguson did, just as Guardiola's doing, just as Jurgen Klopp's doing. He had absolute power. He controlled everything. And he's been very successful, and the club grew with him. They moved to a new stadium. They started landing blows on their great rivals, Real Madrid. Atletico hadn't won a trophy from 96 to 2010. When David De Gea played in that team, with players like Diego Forlan and Sergio Aguero. But they were a selling club then. Manchester United are not even a selling club. So I do think that a hungry, determined manager who shapes the club, even a club as big as Manchester United, is the way forward. Who is that manager? And if Scholes is saying it's about a manager and Rio saying it's about a structure, they've both got points there, because that structure has got to appoint that manager. And it's got to be best in class. Is it best? Are the people at the club at the moment best in class, or are they learning on the job? I've got doubts. And who is the manager to come in and to change everything? I see that Ten Hag, I get that. I've said Luis Enrique till I'm blue in the face, but he's going to be really difficult to get. He's actually exactly the type of manager you want. He could galvanise a club like this. He's got the balls, he's played at the huge clubs, he's dealt with the pressure, he's been at Barcelona, he's been at Real Madrid, he's won the treble. And I think United have been quite unlucky with timing, unlucky that when they asked about Guardiola, he'd agreed to go to City. When they asked about Klopp, Van Gaal was in a pretty strong position at Old Trafford. So I think United need a change of fortune in terms of the managers. And Jose, as Laurie said, I think he probably brought more optimism as a manager when he came in, someone who could go toe-to-toe with Pep. But that started to come apart after a couple of years as well. And they get quite close. Ollie got quite close. Josie got quite close. They get that second place finish, and the following season it seems to fall apart, and I don't know why that happens.
Yeah, there's more info on Simeone, of course, Andy, in your piece as well that's on The Athletic at the minute, including some interesting takes in that as well from Gary Neville.
Well, Gary played against him and managed against him. And I remember when he was managing Valencia against him, the stuff he was telling me, and it made me angry. And I'm like, why don't you do this to him then? Why don't you do that to him? And he went, calm down, Andy, bleeding hell. But Simeone gets under your skin and is hugely effective. And you hate him, but you want him in your corner. You can see that at the end of the game, Atletico fans were singing, Cholo, 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 Simeone. And Gary said at the end of the game, he walked to shake his hand when he was at Valencia. He walked past me, fist pumping, and ignored me. I thought, you're a twat, but you're a winning twat. He's unforgiving. The mentality was so driven for his own team that he didn't care for anybody else. He's probably a nice bloke off the pitch, but when his team are on it, he's a brutal operator. I'd love to see him manage a big English club against a Pep or a Klopp, managing the team with the ferocity on the pitch and in the dressing room.
Could he be a choice for United?
He's loved in Madrid. He's paid a lot of money in Madrid. His whole sort of cultural hinterland has been in the Spanish-speaking world. He's the king of Atletico. You're basically giving that, you would be giving that up to join a club which gets rid of their manager every 2 years, which doesn't give their manager the power that he would probably want. Even though they said they tried that with David Moyes, and it would be an awful lot to give up. You know, there's the lifestyle when he's living in a nice city. I think one of these great managers, Manchester United is still a huge attractive club. They can still pay the top wages, but I can't see him coming out of Atletico Madrid at the moment. He'd really have to push for that. I remember when Jose was at Real Madrid and he played here, he knocked United out of the Champions League again in 2013, and he was like overly magnanimous. This is a great club, the best team lost tonight. And I'm thinking, you're putting a marker down for the future, whereas Simeone just comes in, blanks everyone. Yeah, I've done you, see you later, bye bye.
Yeah, there's a bit of a difference there, isn't there, to be fair. I mean, Laurie, obviously Manchester United now no silverware to play for. It's going to confirm the club's longest run without a trophy since a 9-year period, I think it was, between 1974 and 1983. So it's an historic period really for United without silverware, especially considering the resources available, the managers they've had, the money that they've had to spend as well during this time. Is the one thing that might come out of this year the fact that it has been so disappointing for United? Early exits now from the Champions League, the League Cup and the FA Cup, an uphill task it seems to get back into the Champions League next year. Is there a sense that there's no sticking plaster on this? It really does need a proper look at, a proper think, a proper change and some proper appointments moving forward.
I think that's a really nice way to view things, and you could well be right. I'm always hesitant with this club, with the way it's run, that you always think, well, we've been here before, you know. I do think with Richard Arnold as chief executive, he isn't someone who accepts mediocrity in commercial world, so it sounds like he might not accept mediocrity in the football world and wants to know why things have gone wrong and how things can be fixed. Obviously he's not a football person, you know, his business is in terms of growing sponsorships at Manchester United, but if he's got that mentality where he won't accept second best and wants real accountability from people that can have an influence on the pitch, then I think that's a good thing. Proof is in the pudding though, isn't it? You know, it'll be what signings are made, what kind of managers appointed. I know there's only a small pool really, but as long as there's a structure in place that's actually working well for whoever is in charge and they're going out and getting players with speed and the right profile, then yeah, it could, you'd think that this is a real wake-up call to show that actually how far United are off it, you know, both in the league and in the Champions League, that they're nowhere close, are they? So, you know, if they don't use this as a wake-up call, then I think the situation's worse than we even thought.
Yeah, could this be a catalyst for change, Andy? There's been sort of newspaper reports over the last few days that Old Trafford could be demolished, all very dramatic. But in terms of a symbol, could this be the moment that United gets demolished and rebuilt, ready for next year?
Wishful thinking. I don't think the club or the stadium is going to be rebuilt that quickly. I think with the stadium, Old Trafford's still a very good stadium. It's tatty. I've written about it. I've been writing about it for 7 or 8 years, saying that redevelopment needs to be done. It needs to be bigger. There's still a huge demand for tickets, despite the failings of the club. There's issues with the stadium. The roof comes down in too low. But I'm sitting now, and it's beautiful. It's this big red cavity. And I'm a stadium freak. And I travel the world looking at stupid football grounds. And this is not a bad stadium, but it does need considerable investment on it. Laurie made a very important point. Richard Arnold, he's the main man now. He's doing a lot behind the scenes to develop his version of what Manchester United should be. He's talking to a lot of people. He's having meetings and dinners with lots of different people. And he's not a football man, but I think he could be more assertive than his predecessor. He's working out of Old Trafford rather than London. He's a tough negotiator. He's a tough operator. I think he'll delegate a lot more, certainly in terms of profile. We saw evidence of that at the quarterly earnings, in terms of different people speaking to the media. And if someone's not achieving, I think he'll ask why. Why are you not bringing me this money in? You know, he's got a lot of people reporting into him. He's got a lot on his plate. And I don't think anything's going to turn around so quickly, because City is so well oiled as a footballing operation at the moment. Liverpool got an excellent manager, obviously got a very good team there as well. Chelsea, we don't know what's going to happen there. Arsenal's quite interesting, because they were under serious pressure to get rid of their manager. I remember at the start of this season in August, an agent called me and said he was basically looking at putting his manager into Arsenal, and he wanted to know if I knew who the current sporting director was, because the old one had gone, blah blah blah. I said, they're going to get rid of him, aren't they? And I just asked a few questions and got told no. And that's pretty brave, but it's also vindicated, because Arteta seems to be doing a decent job now. I think Richard Arnold will be putting everybody under him under serious pressure, but the elephants in the room are, these players are on absolutely massive contracts with millions of followers on social media, and they're just not performing to the level of their status. And it brings us back to the point, you need a really strong manager to galvanise that dressing room, because there's some really good players there, but they've seldom looked at this season.
Okay, I think that's a good place to leave it, to be fair. Thank you, Andy and Laurie, for being with us from the stadium. It's late now, it's about 12:45 on Tuesday night, obviously reflecting on Manchester United's early exit from the Champions League. A hugely disappointing night. Thank you guys at home for listening. If you've lasted this long, of course, don't forget you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/Man United Pod to get all the best Manchester United coverage. Before we go, though, there is a very key, important question that we need answered. Andy Mitten's got a smile on his face and his finger in the air, and I think he's thinking what I'm thinking. Have you spoken to the security guard, and how did his date go?
Yes, I have. That was the question I was thinking. I'm smiling for the first time all night, and the date went really well.
Excellent. So, is it going to be a number two?
I think it's looking really promising, and when I said to him tonight, what time are you throwing us out? I can see him now. There he is. He's over there. He's on the phone. He might be on the phone to her. You're on the phone to your date? You're on the phone to your date? Not tonight. He's being coy now because he knows he's being recorded. But can I just say publicly, it went well on Saturday.
It went really well.
Went really well.
Excellent. When's he seen her again,
Andy?
Again?
That's the only question I'll ask you. Tomorrow.
Oh.
Tomorrow? Okay.
A happy ending to
okay,
a terrible night.
So he's got
night.
A shoulder to cry on, has he?
For our favourite Manchester United employee.
There is actually one more final thing, though, to discuss. Because it came.
What's
it
that?
It came on my match chat, and there's quite a lot of questions about a certain interview that you promised, Andy, was going to be up by today. It's still not up. People want paying.
Lee Sharp's not
Lee
up.
Lee Sharp,
yet.
Still not up.
I'm getting grief for it. People are coming up to me in real life saying, like, where's Lee Sharp? And I had to ring Lee Sharp today and apologise because the interview's not gone up yet. And he'd asked me last week when it was going up, and I said at the weekend, and he's laughing about it. And now, like, people are saying, people think it's been, like, legaled or it's been held back because he said something really controversial. Poor Lee.
What do you think is going to happen first? Manchester United win a trophy or this Lee Sharp thing drops?
A source tells me it's out on Friday. So fingers crossed, eh?
Right, well, I trust your source, but I work my backside off to travel 7 hours to see him and to get it delivered to meet
give
my deadline.
Give over, you went on the pissing, have you? Don't give me that.
You're right as well, but it did take me 7 hours to get there.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing it was worth it, and one day, eventually, we will see the fruits of that labour. Andy's nodding because he's about to get chucked out of Old
Trafford
again. Yeah,
we're about to get thrown out again.
For the second time this week. But yeah, I hope we put a smile on your face anyway at the end of what was quite a depressing podcast at times. But thank you for your company, Andy, Laurie. Cheers to you two as well. Manchester United don't play again, incredibly, for 2.5 weeks, so we've got 2.5 weeks to wallow on this result. But don't worry, Talk of the Devils will be a shoulder to cry on. We'll be here, of course, next week. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.